sights to show you.
Well, the Mercury retrograde ended yesterday, so you know you have no idea what that means.
No, nope, don't know what that is. What is that?
It's nothing.
Is it an astrology thing?
It's an astrology thing.
Okay.
It's 100% an astrology thing, and I knew you weren't going to know anything.
I'm like, yeah, no, Mercury totally. Is bad for the environment. Huh?
No, it's an astrology thing.
No one should ingest Mercury, yes.
It's so funny.
It's like the complete, it's just like this movie, complete, like, not
yeah.
getting the conversation across.
It's all communication. But, all right.
We can let people know this will be a briefer one. But, I mean, they've had weeks of two-hour episodes.
It's been, like almost, well, let's see. Yeah, it's been, like, a whole month of two-hour episodes.
Yeah, exactly. We explore a lot of history. It's nice to lighten up a little bit.
This is going
to
be a palate cleanser.
This is the Mercury retrograde, whatever that shit is.
No, Mercury retrograde's bad. We don't like Mercury retrograde.
Okay, you'll have to explain this to me at some point.
Yeah, I'll explain it to you off air, because okay. it's very convoluted. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Anthony Fuentes.
What is up? It's morning time. We're finally doing it in the morning.
It's finally. We finally got to record in an early morning.
Because March has been so crazy.
Which is good, because now we have all day to do our stuff.
Yes,
but
we suffered to give you guys my birthday episodes, so this we're giving us all, everyone gets a palate cleanser today.
Mm-hmm.
And what a palate cleanser it is. I say, I love this fucking
it's
movie.
It's so fun. It's so fun.
It's like, fun. Yeah.
And it's so funny, because DJ, when we watched it, was just like, that was such a dumb movie. And I was just like, but it's such a good dumb
yeah,
movie.
Exactly.
Like, it's such like a smart dumb movie.
Smart dumb. Yes,
it's
I agree.
It's a smart dumb movie.
It's,
you know what
I
mean?
It's dumb with intention.
Yeah. So, enough. You've seen the title of the film, so you know what we're talking about.
Yeah,
we might
exactly.
as well just dive into
it. Yeah, there you go.
We are talking about the 2010 film, Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
2010?
Yeah.
What the? Dude, okay, and this shit was in production in 2009, so it's like, this is a decade-old film.
Yeah.
Holy
I mean,
shit.
I was about to be like, this is a really recent film, but it's like a 10-year-old movie.
Yeah. No, it really is, like, that recent. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Like, I mean, in my head, I think it's really recent, but it is a 10-year-old movie.
I don't, that just reminds me of how long it's been since I've been to fucking college. Which, that's horrible.
Yeah. No, yeah. Time is weird. So, for those of you who have not seen this movie, if you need a palate cleanser but need your blood and guts, like, watch this movie.
Yes. Honestly, like this will be our, like, stop, pause, please, because, like, if you're a horror fan, this is a movie for horror fans.
If,
like, absolutely.
Like, it's like Cabin in the Woods, like, dopey older brother.
Yes! Oh, I love that. That's such a good description. And I actually, I like this more than Cabin in the Woods.
Really?
So yeah, this is definitely more my jam.
Well, this is like more on the, if comedy and horror was like a spectrum chart, like this is definitely more on the comedy side,
mm-hmm.
while Cabin in the Woods is definitely more on the horror side.
I think, oh really?
I mean, yeah, I think, in my mind, Cabin in the Woods is a much darker film in comparison.
It is, actually, that's true. This has a lot more heart.
Yeah, to me, Cabin in the Woods is much more creepy.
It's a lot more cynical than this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is a lot more just like, hoarder.
Yeah.
Like,
although Cabin in the Woods does have, they both have good deaths, because there's the whole Chris Hemsworth stuff in Cabin in the Woods. And then there's this one, which has
a lot.
Wood chipper.
Yeah. There's a wood chipper.
Yes.
So immediately you know it's going to be a good time.
But the IMDb synopsis for this bad boy reads, two scruffy pals, Tyler Labine and Alan Tudyk, backwoods vacation takes a bloody turn when ignorant college students mistake them for a pair of murderous hillbillies. That's all you need to know.
That's all you need to know going into it. So if you haven't watched it, pause the podcast now to go watch the movie. It is on Netflix. It is on Hulu. It is pretty much the most readily available comedy, like horror comedy film. So pause it now. And welcome back. I hope you liked it, because we sure as fuck did.
Yes. And again, if you've actually decided to watch The Killing of America prior to this, our last episode, you're gonna need to watch this shit. You're gonna need to watch this one.
I wish that I had watched The Killing of America and then we were able to watch this like immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
Because this would have been an amazing palate cleanser.
And also really quickly referring to our past episodes, thank you for all the response for Watership Down. You guys have, again, emphasized in the podcast how traumatizing it was for children. I'm glad a lot of you backed up my point.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of people who were just like, this movie is, like, fucking terrifying. And so I'm glad it wasn't just Anthony who watched it because...
My favorite comment was, rated G for gory AF.
Yeah, I loved that.
But let's go back. Okay, yeah. So some tragic news with this one. The budget and the box office, there's just a big disparity there. Well, unfair.
It was unfair. So the movie was released. It had a limited theater release.
Yeah, that's so true. Limited theatrical.
So it didn't get, I don't think, the box office
it deserves.
That it deserves. So it was released on September 30th, 2011.
Yeah.
So it's actually not 2010, it's 2011, my bad.
Interesting. Well, 2010, I'm sure it got made. Sundance.
So it was released, because it was on the indie film circuit.
Yeah,
so
it was an indie darling.
Yeah, definitely. So it was directed by Eli Craig, and its budget was $5 million, and its box office was $4.7 million. So it was just under breaking even.
To be fair, I don't think they had a marketing budget. No. So that's probably pretty even right there.
It's true. Yeah. No, I think that's about, and also considering... the royalties from everything since in the 10 years since, and how it definitely is still available on streaming sites and everything. I think they've recuperated since then. I think they're doing okay.
But in the early 2000s, it basically cost Eli Craig $300K to give you guys this film.
Yeah,
this love letter of a fucking horror film.
Definitely.
And who's starring in this bitch, Alex?
So Tyler Labine as Dale Dobson.
Dale Dobson.
Alan Tudyk, a fucking, I love.
Awesome motherfucker.
Like, love him so much.
If we weren't doing a horror podcast, I'd say let's cover A Knight's Tale. So we could just talk about Alan Tudyk.
I could talk about, he also did iRobot. He did Firefly.
He was in Dodgeball.
Oh,
you don't like comedies, but he's such a good character in Dodgeball.
I have a very fun family story that I will tell you later, and I need you to remind me.
Okay, I will.
It's a very fun family story that I'm not going to divulge here. But he was in Dodgeball. He was in iRobot. He was my favorite character in Firefly. Like, literally, like, I grew up watching him. He was in Dollhouse. Like, literally, like, yes.
Yes, and he does a good British accent.
Yeah,
he does a damn good, and, like, to the point where I thought he was a Brit. Like, literally until this fucking movie, I'm like, whoa.
What?
How is he doing such a good American accent? I looked up interviews, and I'm like, that's an American!
Katrina Bowden as Allison, Jesse Moss as Chad.
Fucking Chad. And then the rest of the cast is fodder.
Yeah, basically, honestly, after that, it's just like, you got your Chucks, you got your Naomis, you got your Jason, you got your Mitch, you got your Mike, you got your Todds.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a clusterfuck. We're gonna get into it.
Absolutely.
It's every shitty slasher trope you can imagine. It's
done
so fun.
Masterfully, yes.
Masterfully. It's so fun. But this is going to be a short one because there is not a whole lot to go off of.
Yes. Yeah. We're just going to have to gush about this film for a long fucking time, which we'll get to.
We're going to talk about the film. We're going to talk about some of the tropes. The discussion's going to be, it's going to be pretty discussion heavy. Mm-hmm. We're going to go pretty easy on, honestly, both you and ourselves this week.
I think we need this.
We need this, considering the past couple of weeks, it's just been a complete shit show. So this week is going to be pretty short.
But people are responding to our shit show, so whatever. We'll suffer for it.
It's fine. So if you like the shorter episodes, because some people do, some people are just like more 3-hour episodes.
Yeah,
like.
It's so weird. But in terms of the production of this film, so this actual production began back in 2009, June 2009, actually, so almost 10 years ago, this started with the casting of the actors. Principal photography started 1 month later after the casting of the actors in Calgary, Alberta.
Yeah,
it
was filmed in good old Canada.
Good old Canada in October 2000.
I almost said Canada just to do that too. And I'm really upset that you did it.
That I did
We would have done it at the same time, and I'm very upset. Anyway.
Darn it, that we almost almost organic there. So you have the ability to withhold your instincts. But in October 2009, post-production ensued in British Columbia, and the first images were released as part of the American film market. On Halloween 2009, the first trailer was released. Dude, 2 years? Okay. This movie really deserves more fucking love. Mm-hmm. Tucker and Dale is Eli Craig's directorial debut. He's also an actor and a screenwriter. He and his wife play a small role in the film as the news reporter and cameraman, respectively.
In the very beginning of the film?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually an homage to The Blair Witch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So technically, the film premiered on January 22nd, 2010 at the Sundance Film Festival, and it played again just a couple months later on March 12th, 2010 as part of the SXSW South by Southwest Film Festival, which is actually a big deal.
It's pronounced South by Southwest.
Whatever. I did the acronyms.
That's why I put South by Southwest in parentheses.
Just don't give me the acronyms. I will read them.
That's not the acronym. That's how it's typed out everywhere, and mm-hmm. it's pronounced South by Southwest.
Interesting. Okay. See?
Yeah. So it's also a music festival.
Interesting. See, I know this only from like Wikipedia bits that I read on other films, and in my mind it's just SXSW.
Yeah, it's South by Southwest.
South by South. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But interesting bit, before this film or premiered, what actually happened with this one, which I discovered pretty recently, mm-hmm. It got leaked online.
Do you think that has anything to do with its box office?
Maybe, but it didn't get leaked the full version. So there was a version before this that had different line reads because some of them were a little out of character for characters like Tucker. And the filmmaker, as you can see by the villain, loved The Dark Knight. Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight. He based Chad off of Harvey Dent. But he in the early cut, he used the Dark Knight film score for some of the scenes. So there was a big cut being circulated around the time it premiered, of the not good lines, the unfinished special effects. So there's only two CGI shots in the film. They both were unfinished, so that actually they were kind of shitty anyways, but they stood out, the B. But yeah, so this was online, but the thing is, like, it would still gain some hype. But it was like people wanted to see the full version, obviously, but it's so underground.
And the parts that they had seen weren't that great, so mm-hmm. Okay, I can see how that would probably
affect it a little bit.
Yeah, it had hurt the film.
Yeah, because again, it was like not finalized cut of the film was out for a while around this time, but it did get distribution. The film was distributed by Magnolia and received a limited theatrical release in the U.S. on September 30th, 2011. Yeah, this thing actually at the South by Southwest Film Festival and Sundance got a lot of good buzz. Like, it even won some awards, and nobody bought it. Nobody bought it. Fucking sucks. And it actually ended up being billed for a while as the best horror comedy that no one's buying. Isn't that insane?
That's so awful, because it's such a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's between good movies and profitability, but horror is usually pretty profitable, which is why it's too smart for its own goddamn good, honestly. Yeah. Like, that's what it was. On its opening weekend, the film grossed $52,843 in 30 theaters. Jesus.
Yeah.
That sucks, too. After the film's limited theatrical release, it did ultimately go on to become a cult classic, which is absolutely true. I saw this in 2012.
Yeah. No, this film, like, everyone who is even remotely a horror fan has seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil and enjoys it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
I have not met someone who is just like, it's a shitty movie and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Who's a horror fan.
Like, even like if you're not like crazy about it, you still enjoyed it, I feel like, no matter what.
Alex Webster, like, resident, like, I hate horror comedies. I don't like them.
You don't like them?
I don't. I don't like scary movies.
Okay,
I don't. Most comedies. I'm just not a comedy fan.
Yeah, exactly. We know. We've been through the history of trauma
knows.
That was your childhood.
I don't like comedies. I just don't like them. I guess, I don't know. I'm not a happy person.
This is where I need DJ's backup. So we can both pile on here, but yes.
No, I don't like comedies, but I love this movie.
Yeah, it's
this
good.
This is a comedy that I make an exception for because it's so
it is, and it does horror, again, very, very well.
Yeah.
But, Rotten Tomatoes reports that 83% of the 102 surveyed critics gave this film a positive review, with the average being a 6.9 out of 10 rating.
That's a C.
I mean, that's a Rotten Tomatoes B plus.
Yeah.
That would be a C anywhere else, but Rotten Tomatoes is pretty goddamn yeah. good because they like fucking Oscar movies would be like, yeah, that was a 7.1. The critical consensus states, like a quote, like the best horror comedies, Tucker and Dale vs. Evil mines its central crazy joke for some incredible scares, laughs, and, believe it or not, heart. Metacritic reports that the film received, quote, generally favorable reviews, which is, again, Metacritic B plus as well, I would say.
Yeah.
Todd Gilhurst of Shot Till You Drop wrote, Eli Craig's feature debut celebrates genre conventions while turning the traditional view of horror movie heroes and villains upside down. Woo! Oh, and Roger Ebert. Woof.
He liked the movie.
It's in 2009 or 10, before he died.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, man, that's like right in the era, too. Mm-hmm. That's, this was probably one of the last movies he actually reviewed. Roger Ebert also gave the film a, Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert also ha! Gave the film, Ebert, I remember that, gave the film a positive review stating, quote, students of the little movie glossary may find it funny how carefully Tucker and Dale worked its way through upended cliches, which it absolutely fucking does.
I'm just happy that he liked the movie.
Yeah, no, he's usually kind of a grouch about horror.
So. Yeah, of course, yeah. That's why anytime I see that he, like, has a positive view on, he had a positive view on any horror film, I'm just like, ha!
Yeah, look at this! Tucker Dale has actually gone on to win a few awards in the indie movie circuit, which I pointed out earlier. Yeah. It actually did really, really well.
Like, it was nominated for a shit ton of awards, and it won quite a few of them. Yeah, lot of them, you know, kind of giving note to Eli Craig for mm-hmm. his direction,
which was really good. Yeah. It actually was really solid. The movie looked more than $5 million to me.
Yeah,
but like, man, that's why they pitched it as the best movie nobody's picking up.
Yeah,
because fucking A, dude. If they had a bigger studio, I feel like this could have been much wider. But I'm glad that it's our little thing.
I truly feel like if it hadn't leaked, mm-hmm. I think probably someone would have had the chance to see it for the first time and would have been like, I'm going to take a chance on this.
Actually, you bring up a really good point right now, because this is during the time when piracy had those, like, big, like, if you pirate a thingy, you're stealing a car. Like, yeah, that's stupid
shit. You wouldn't steal a car.
You wouldn't steal a car. Why would you steal a movie? But, like, that gave studios a lot of fear. So yeah. If this movie had already been pirated, they're like, we're not going to waste money on something that's already out there, even if it's not the cut that everybody likes. That actually makes a lot of sense, because studios were little bitches in this early 2010s phase.
Yeah.
So at Horror Hound in 2014, cast members Tyler Labine and Alan Tudyk confirmed that a sequel is in development, which sparked a lot of hope from fans of the film. Another update actually came in 2016. The two primary actors revealed that they are still actively developing the project despite other commitments. Which, I mean, yeah, they're obviously busy guys. They're pretty big compared to the rest of the cast in this film. But when asked the status of the sequel at the Boston Comic Con in 2017, Alan Tudyk responded that the script had been written but was disappointing and unlikely to be moving forward. So it's not very likely that we'll be seeing a sequel to this film in anytime in the near future, which sucks.
It sucks, but also I think it's a perfectly fine standalone movie.
I agree.
I don't think it needs a sequel.
I don't think so either, especially it's been so long.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be like a big, that's too much to like pull away from that. Like, there's too much they'd have to update on if it's been like 10 fucking years. And then honestly, like, I'm glad that they're like, it has to be good enough before we even consider it. Like, that's smart filmmakers right there.
Well, yeah, and they're just... Well, the fact that... Because also, like, Alan Tudyk is just, in general, involved with, like, production. And, like, he's very involved in fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all in all.
Oh, yeah, because, Boston Comic Con, man. This dude's going out there.
Well, I mean, but, like, I mean, he's very, like... he also, like, just because of his involvement with, like, the Firefly franchise and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, just in Whedonverse stuff. He's pretty involved in, like, fan-based stuff. So he goes to a lot of cons and...
That's so cool.
Yeah, he's a super cool dude.
He's so cool.
I'd love to meet him one day.
Seriously. I'd like to shake this man's hand.
But, So, Alan Tudyk, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the show.
Yes, we would love to interview you for this podcast. Somebody, we're in Los Angeles.
Come on.
Alex is going to tell us a little bit about horror comedies, though, which is something we actually haven't touched on here. This is new. New stuff. Yeah. New stuff, guys.
So, comedy horror comedies. Everyone is pretty familiar. We talked a little bit about it earlier. Some of the most common ones that we've talked about, you know, this is a great example. This is if someone were to say name a horror comedy, Tucker and Dale versus Evil is the perfect example. But horror comedy is a literary and film genre that combines elements of comedy and horror fiction. So it's exactly what
Exactly.
Horror comedy has been described as been able to be categorized under three different types: black comedy, parody, and spoof. It also crosses over really predominantly in the black comedy genre.
Interesting.
Yeah. Comedy horror can also be parody or subtly spoof horror cliches as its main source of humor and use those elements to take a story in a different direction. Mm. An example of this would be Cabin in the Woods from 2011 or Zombieland in 2009. Zombieland, interestingly enough, is its own subset of horror comedy of zombie comedies.
Zomcoms. It'll be zom-coms. With Shaun of the Dead and all that stuff.
There's a whole list of zomcoms. Like, so I think that's, I don't know why zombies are so funny. Maybe it's just because it's like people acting like when people are zombies, they're just acting like idiots, and they're just like, that's funny because it's very like, it's body humor.
Yeah. Well,
maybe.
That,
I don't know.
I feel like zombies are very brutal, but they're also super dumb.
Mm-hmm.
So like you can avoid getting killed by a zombie, but you can also very dumbly get killed by a zombie.
Yeah.
And for comedy, it's like there's a lot of buffoonery
that's an excellent point. I think you actually hit the nail on the head with that.
Thank you. But also one really good horror comedy that is more recent. Have you seen Your Next?
No, so I actually had the opportunity to watch the premiere of this at Comic-Con one year, and I didn't go.
Oh, I went to a test screening.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, at Comic-Con one year. They had, like, a free screening while I was there, and I had a free ticket, and they were like, yeah, just show up. It's going to be a good time. And it was, like, in downtown, and I was just like, I want to go, but it was also, like, I was just like, I'm 18. I'm fucking exhausted. I'm going home. Like,
we'll see. Yeah, I actually saw it in college. Somebody linked
me. You were in college when I was 18. So
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
because I was also in college.
Exactly. No, they linked me to it. Somebody like through a text, and I'm just like, yeah, I'll sign up for a free ticket, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they took our phones, and we went to go into the local theater, and they're like, well, this is a test screening, so you guys get to, you know, ask any questions, whatever it is, and blah blah blah. And we watched the movie, and the whole crowd was fucking into it. Like, they packed the house. It was really, really, really cool.
Yeah, but I want to see it. So I've never seen it.
If you guys want to hear a podcast about Your Next, just let us know in the comments if you actually listen to the episode. We will totally, totally cover it at some point.
So find us on Instagram at horror. Find us on Instagram
at the name of our podcast, yes.
At Horrible People's Podcast, and there will surely be a post related to this episode, and you can be like, hey, do an episode on Your Next, or
Twitter,
or add us at Horror People Pod.
Horror People Pod, plug-in, yes.
Great plug.
Great plug.
Go me.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. So, parody and spoof comedy can most famously be encompassed by the Scary Movie series, but arguably those can be more strictly parody than horror.
They are... Absolutely, I feel strictly parody. I only really enjoy the first two, to be honest with you. And two, I'm like, meh. I'm like, nah.
It's a hard meh.
It's like if I'm really in the mood. Really stoned and want to see the David Cross parts. Then I'll watch two. But one, I still like only because nostalgia.
Yeah.
I saw one in theaters when I was a very small child.
Oh my God.
Because my parents didn't know how bad it would be. They did not know how bad they would be. But we got so far into the film, they're like, fuck it.
We're
just gonna keep watching it, but there's the part where Marlon Wayans gets the dick through his ear. Sean Wayans.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then everybody was like, they all looked. I remember my parents looking at me, and I'm just like, shrug.
How old were you?
Scary Movie was like, what, 97?
No.
98? Probably like 10 years old? Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, about 10. 10 or 11, I'm not sure.
Your mom is my hero.
Yeah. That's funny. She would appreciate it. She listens to the podcast. Hi, Mom.
In horror comedy, gallows humor is also a common tactic used, of course. Mm. While horror comedy films provoke scares for audiences, they also provide something that dramatic horror films do not, which is the permission to laugh at your fears and to whistle past the cinematic graveyard and feel secure in the knowledge that the monsters can't get you.
That's a really good point.
So this is something that I love because it really does really encapsulate why horror comedies are as popular as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because they make light and they make a joke out of the things that scare us in horror films normally.
Yeah.
Which is what I appreciate. I do love a good amount of humor in any horror film, but when
there needs some levity.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And for there to be a specific subgenre where there is both comedic elements and horror elements, I do appreciate.
It's a good thing for people who want to watch scary movies but get too fucking scared.
Yeah.
Like, they still get to have all the elements, but they get to have it in a palatable kind of way,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of our listeners actually... Some of you guys don't actually like horror movies, which I've noticed.
Well, a lot of my friends that listen to this podcast, which I love and appreciate all of you, don't like horror films.
Yeah. Well, same with some of my friends, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they, or some of the other listeners, but they like learning about them, which is cool, because horror has a cool history sometimes.
Yeah. I think that this podcast in particular is a really cool way to learn about horror films mm-hmm. if you're a fan of media or horror in theory, but not mm-hmm. so much in practice.
Yes. And if you want to watch something and not get freaked the fuck out, watch Tucker and Dale vs. Evil or You're Next or any of these horror comedies because you might actually really like them and be able to embrace the tropes and things. And,
exactly.
And yes.
Well, for me, it's not that... Because, like, horror films scare me. Like, most horror films really, really get to me and really scare me, but I like the feeling of being scared, which is mm-hmm. why I like scary movies.
And roller coasters and walking through the hood.
Not so much the walking through the hood part, but sure. But no, like, you know, I like that feeling of being scared because with horror films, there is that fear, but I know by the end of it, there's going to be a resolution.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's a good point.
And so it...
You're not going to have that horror gut punch that they'll flip of the coin, either give you happiness, they'll fuck you up. That's typically horror.
Right. But, you know, at the end, usually there's some kind of resolution. And mm-hmm. then there's ones that don't. And those are the ones that I also like. So it just depends on how I'm feeling that day, which
exactly.
is why it's taken me forever to watch Hereditary.
Oh, God. Okay, I have to actually get you that copy today. So that's going to happen.
Okay. Anyway, but... Actually, believe it or not, horror comedy goes all the way back to the era of silent film.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
The source material for early comedy horror films come from stage performances instead of literature, although it does come from both.
Mm-hmm.
One example, The Ghostbreaker from 1914, was based on a 1904 play. Through the film's horror elements were more interesting to the audience than the comedy elements in the United States.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. That's like early freaking 20th century right there.
Yeah, so super early. So in the United States, by the way, following the trauma of World War I, film audiences sought to see horror on the screen but tempered with humor.
Hmm.
The quote-unquote pioneering comedy horror film was One Exciting Night from 1922, which was written, directed, and produced by D.W. Griffin.
Ugh, interesting.
Yes, I'm talking about A Birth of a Nation... D.W. Griffith.
You know what's funny, though? Like, this guy, he did Birth of a Nation, but he really tried to, like, change his legacy after that with the
film. Oh, no,
he
didn't.
No?
Keep listening.
Oh, interesting.
Who noticed the stage success of the genre and foresaw a cinematic translation. While the film included blackface performances, Griffith also included footage of a hurricane for a climactic storm. So, like, this is, like, like, no. There's, like, actual blackface. I mean, continue.
Different era, obviously. Not great. Still not great. But there were other films he did many years afterwards where I wouldn't say it was immediately after Birth of the Nation, but he really did actually try to move away from that. But he's in this fucking era where it's, like... That's commercial.
No, yeah, he's gonna live with that for the rest.
No, I'm not absolving him. I'm not absolving him, but I'm saying that he clearly understood what he ended up doing with Birth of a Nation, and way later on was like, fuck, okay, the world's changing. I gotta make up for this shit. I can't remember the name of the film that did it, though, but it still actually had some stereotypes in it, which, you know, you can't...
Did you even try?
I could tell he tried because it wasn't Birth of the Nation. That was the only thing.
Some source Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein as the first commercially successful comedy horror film. But its success legitimized the genre and established it as commercially viable.
It's funny because that is one that has the top of mind when it comes to early comedy horror. Mm-hmm. Like, people always reference Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I just, whenever I research and stuff, that's noise scared the crap out of me.
But Anthony's computer's making sounds and shit.
I know. Which they can't even hear.
But so yeah, that's pretty much a brief history about comedy horror. It kind of... that was it for the history that I could really find, but I'm sure, you know, eventually at some point when we do, like, Cabin in the Woods and stuff, we can kind of do a more contemporary look at mm-hmm. where it went through the, you know, 2000s, because we really didn't see a whole lot of it.
Yeah.
Through, you know, like, the 70s, 80s, 90s. Well, I mean, late 90s, but mm-hmm. then, you know, we really saw a really big blow up of comedy horror in the 2000, in like the late 2000s, 2010s, like this era that this movie came out.
Oh, absolutely, because we're a cynical fucking era.
Right. So we like
we need to
laugh.
Always be like, right. Shit on everything. Yeah.
Right. But it's also like making fun of it, but also being critical. So mm-hmm. I would say this is in a similar vein of like Scream.
Yes.
Where it's like...
It's a commentary.
Yeah, it's a commentary, but also, like, it's like, you know, we want to fucking laugh.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah. There are, in terms of just being the spoof genre, there are actually a few examples after some of the big dogs. Psycho had a bunch of spoofs. Halloween had some spoofs, too. Like, those exist, but the audience wasn't there. So they just all fall under, like, the wayside, and nobody remembers them. I can't even bring up the names. I don't remember them.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the there's always been a need to spoof these big fundamental films because it makes money.
Yeah.
It's just none of these things ever tend to find any kind of success unless the general consensus is, like, we want this.
Yeah, in my mind... If something starts as being authentic and genuine and actually being a horror film, well, mm-hmm. I mean, not to say that this isn't a horror film, but to say, like, taking Halloween and then trying to make a comedy horror Halloween, mm-hmm. that's not going to work.
No,
in the similar vein that if you were to try to take Tucker and Dale versus Evil and turn it into a traditional quote-unquote slasher film, mm-hmm. it wouldn't work. So I think you have to... pick your lane and stay in it.
Well, an example of this is on, I believe, the DVD. They initially wanted to do a cut of the film from the college kid's perspective. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that makes total sense.
However, the director, when he did the cut, was like, this is too much like the shit that we're spoofing, so we can't do it.
Yeah.
And, like, that's a perfect example of what you said, because it reminds you have to stay in the lane. You have to pick your lane, basically.
It's too much Texas Chainsaw.
Exactly. So now we're going to go ahead and discuss some things about this film. So what kind of horror comedies have you actually seen in the past? Like, what was some of the big dogs?
So, I mean, we kind of went through quite a few of them. But, I mean, this one, my dad actually showed it to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my dad was just like, have you seen this movie? And I was, and I mean, at this point, I had to have been, I don't know, late teens.
Mm.
So, and I was just like, no, I hadn't seen it. And he was just like, you're going to fucking love this movie.
I know my daughter. She's going to lose her shit.
Yeah. No, my dad is usually pretty spot on with movie recommendations for me. Like, he knows what I like. So we watched it and I fucking loved it. And it's been in my back pocket ever since.
Interesting.
So I'm really happy that I got to watch it again for this.
Yeah. No,
but yeah, so this is obviously the big one. Cabin in the Woods. I've been meaning to do a rewatch because I've only seen it once or twice.
I've seen it twice. Yeah. And I think I really saw it the first time. The second time I was like, I need something funny on while I do some other shit.
Shaun of the Dead.
Yes.
I love Shaun of the Dead.
Oh. That one has heart, too. That one has some moments where I'm like, fuck, man. Like,
Shaun of the Dead is actually a really sad movie.
It is.
But also Shaun of the Dead, but also all of those types of movies. So also, like, At World's End, mm-hmm. like, you know.
The Edgar Wright comedies. Yeah.
They're all fun.
Mm-hmm.
And
you haven't seen Your Next.
No, I haven't seen Your Next. But I also really did enjoy Zombieland, although that's kind of more of a comedy. Horror comedy. Again, horror comedy, more comedy leaning.
It honestly feels more like an adventure film with like comedic and horror elements.
I feel like I need to make like a spectrum right here on your
wall. And we need a chart
and put like up little like thumbtacks like on where I think certain films are on this like spectrum of horror and comedy.
let's post a chart. I like that. We can figure it. If I can't figure it out, then we'll do a regular post. But let's do the chart.
Okay.
And then they're the scary movie films, which I just said earlier my thoughts on them. Like they're nostalgia stuff. They're not necessarily like
good films. I'm trying to think like what other like big horror comedies, because I feel like we're forgetting some.
We're definitely forgetting some. but I mean like a lot of them I feel like become fodder in the recent years. Yeah. There's not stuff that's like huge.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise they'd have much more of an impact. We can very clearly recall Cabin in the Woods because Cabin in the Woods was like a big deal when it came out, even though it didn't make a lot of money.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, Krampus, I guess.
Yeah, that's
that one.
That's comedy-esque. It has Adam Scott in it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so Zombieland, Scary Movie. I think it really just, like, John dies at the end.
I haven't seen that one. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I think, honestly, most of these, it really just depends. I mean, according to Google, Scream, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness are all considered...
Army of Darkness, for sure.
Are considered horror comedy films.
Actually, Evil Dead 2, yeah. Evil Dead 2 and
Happy
Army
Death of... Day. I mean...
Happy Death Day is so good!
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay. Hey, audience guys, if you guys, like, listen to this podcast and you want to spam at the Blonde Dictionary on Twitter to tell...
I'm not the Blonde Dictionary anymore. I am at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Okay, you can... I fucked up. Spam Ghost Coffee Shop on Twitter and get her to watch Happy Death Day, please. like DOS her. Like just straight up, just throw information at her and get her to watch Happy Death Day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the sequel, so I don't know if the series is going to be good, but that first movie, in terms of horror comedies, I'll put it up there. I will totally put it up there with this one and with Scary Movie 1 and all those.
Yeah, it has like Beetlejuice on here, Fright Night's on here, The Lost Boys is on this list.
Beetlejuice I think I can see also, though Beetlejuice I feel is a little bit more grounded than a lot of the other films.
American Werewolf in London.
Is that a comedy?
I don't know. I've never seen American Werewolf in London. I've only seen American Werewolf in Paris.
Yeah.
Which I do like. Interesting. I wouldn't say it's a comedy.
No, I wouldn't say so either.
Necessarily, but no, yeah. A lot of these are...
Oh, what about...
It does say Teeth is a comedy, is a horror comedy. It's not. Is it not?
It's just a fucked up film?
Yeah, it's a freaky fucking movie.
What was the one, Red Eye, the Wes Craven one? Do you remember that? With Cillian Murphy?
I never saw it because Cillian Murphy has one of those faces that scares the shit out of me. Like, he has just...
I can vouch for that. That's true.
Like, he just has, like, one of those, like, aesthetically, like, sharp-looking faces where I'm just like, you look like you're like, a serial killer.
Like, don't smile. Don't use your regular face either. Shit.
But then, like, you put a mask over his head and then say, Scarecrow!
Exactly.
You can't put like a bag over his head.
He plays a great scarecrow.
Yeah, and then he's scarecrow.
Because
he
can take off the mask and you're like, Cillian Murphy is the perfect scarecrow because of how messed up his... And his face is totally symmetrical, too.
That's the thing. It's because he's like, technically speaking, he's beautiful. But like aesthetically speaking, he's like aesthetically beautiful. But it's just like... You're too, like, put together.
Like, if you were to do a film based off any serial killer, any murderer, no matter how that killer actually looks like, you can cast Cillian Murphy in that role and give him glasses or a wig or something, and he'll fit the fucking role.
Oh, you're right. Like, he would be a really good Jeffrey Dahmer.
He would be a great Jeffrey Dahmer, yes.
Anyway, but also, another one would be What We Do in the Shadows.
I haven't seen it.
I've seen parts of it, and I think definitely more comedy, but I think anything that has, like, horror elements to it that's a comedy...
Mm-hmm. It kind of falls in the list.
It falls in the list, but What We Do in the Shadows, I definitely want to... I would advocate for it, because it's, you know...
Okay. It's getting a TV show.
It just premiered.
Oh, it just premiered?
It just started. Interesting. I've heard really good things.
Okay. My friend Maria keeps trying to get me to watch it, actually.
I want to start watching it, because... I do like Flight of the Conchords enough that I think I would like it.
Okay. I'll have to seek it out. If Maria's listening, we should watch it.
Yeah. Housebound. That's on there.
What's Housebound?
It's a horror comedy, I would say. Yeah.
Thus the theme of the podcast. Okay, we've been through enough of them. Yeah. What's your favorite?
What is my favorite?
Your favorite number one horror comedy.
This one, Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Yeah, you know what? Fuck. I'm torn because honestly, this and the first and Happy Death Day, I have a very
good, huh?
I just really like it. It's so funny. Like, it's just funny and like stupid.
Is it funny?
Mm-hmm. It's
Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness is really good, but I feel like Sam Raimi films are their own thing. And this, I wouldn't necessarily put it in the same vein as Tucker and Dale. It's it's literally more camp.
Gotcha.
It's like super camp. So if I'm thinking camp and feeling camp, then but I have to be in the mood for camp.
Mm.
I don't have to be in a mood to watch Tucker and Dale vs. Evil or Happy Death Day. Maybe Cabin in the Woods. But like, you know, like those two I think are as horror comedy as you can get. They're right down the fucking middle. And I think it's hard to pick, but I'd still probably give it to this film.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you? No, you say this one?
Yeah, definitely this one. I think, I mean, the other, like, alternatives would probably only be, like, Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yeah.
But that's also, like, a musical, mm-hmm. but it's also, I mean, I would classify, that's not even, like, a horror film to me. Like, that's just, like, a musical. Like, it's not necessarily, no, because Steve Martin is, like, a homicidal dentist. That part freaks me out.
That has Rick Moranis in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's a tough one, too. I love Rick Moranis.
He's good.
Gremlins 2!
Gremlins.
Gremlins 2. Okay, Gremlins 1 is definitely, like, more horror, I think, with some
comedic
elements.
Yeah, Gremlins was on the list.
But Gremlins 2 is, like, straight up down, like, straight up parrot. Oh, yeah. Dude. Okay, all right. I revert. Gremlins 2, Tucker and Dale, Happy Death Day. Not sure which one to pick.
Okay.
But those are my three options. I'll put a poll or something.
Okay.
Which one should Anthony pick as his favorite horror, comedy horror film?
We'll ask the masses.
I'm down with that.
Okay. Do you think then, moving forward, that there's a future for horror comedies given the current political climate? Do you think it's something that we need?
Yes.
Okay.
No follow up. Yes. No.
Elaborate.
I think we're too goddamn tense right now. And yeah, people are going to be little bitches about this and that here and there. But a good horror comedy, I feel like, as long as it's funny, we'll be okay. Yeah, I mean, you might be insensitive here and there, whatever it is.
I didn't think Tucker and Dale was necessarily insensitive.
No. I'm talking about how people would react to something new, because I feel like that's a big thing.
Here's the thing, is like, I've learned very, very quickly, is that it's impossible to, like, I mean, even with this friggin' podcast, it is impossible to please everyone.
No,
like,
exactly.
I've gotten people that are just like, we really like the short episodes, I really like the long episodes, I like it when it, you know, when it's discussion heavy, I miss the play-by-plays, and it's just like, ah!
but when this movie was out, I feel like the general online or way that we discuss things wasn't as hyper as it is now.
Hyper
exaggerated. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why I feel like it might be a little tougher in today's thing, but we need more. Like, we need things that people can latch on to.
I don't miss anything in particular about, like, the 2010s. No, I think that I agree. I think that the future for horror comedies is something that we desperately need, considering, mm-hmm. especially considering post, like, the, like, Dark Knight series and everything, how, like, dark everything is in film.
Yes.
Like, how everyone decided
we need
collectively grit. How gritty and dark, like, how fucked up can we make everything?
As we just finished our march.
Yeah, well, that was your choice, wasn't it, Anthony?
That's me. I'm a dark individual.
Yeah, you can take responsibility for that.
which I fully stand by.
Right, but, like, I mean, and I'm not saying, like, that's inherently bad, but mm-hmm. I do think that, like, you know, there needs to be, like you said, some levity.
Absolutely.
Like, I think that, you know, we are coming out of, thank goodness, that superhero, like, dip mm-hmm. where it was, everything was super dark, and they were just like, we have to remake every superhero film and make it as dark and as gritty and
fucking edgy motherfuckers,
depressing as fuck.
Yeah, way to go, DC.
Yeah, well, DC's coming out with Shazam
now,
this week.
Now.
Right, but what I'm saying, that's what I'm saying, like, we're coming out of it. Like,
that's
you're
good.
Coming out
yeah.
with, like, things like Shazam, which I'm fucking excited for, because it looks funny as shit.
It does, I agree.
So, like, those are the kinds of things that it's just, like, I'm really looking forward to, but on the flip side of that, if it wasn't for how dark horror films got
mm-hmm.
in the past, we wouldn't be getting things now like the really, really dark looking remake of like Pet Sematary that we're getting that does look really good. Or like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark that's coming out this summer.
I can't wait for that one.
Like, I just saw the trailer and it looked fucking unreal.
Oh, the fucking spider in the cheek.
Yeah. But no, like, so those are the kinds of things where it's like you have, like, it's like, it's right now, it's like with that pendulum where it's like, it's like going from one direction to the other. And I'm just trying to get a place where it's like kind of more centered.
Yes.
Where it's like, but also, you know, because right now, like, cerebral horror is in. Because you would Get Out with Hereditary, all of
the Witch,
the
all
Witch,
that stuff,
like,
yeah.
All that kind of shit where it's super cerebral and it's like, really intense and emotionally draining. And It Follows. And like all those kinds of really artsy type of like in your face kind of stuff. So
yeah, we definitely need some stuff that's gives you levity, but it's also clever about it. Which we don't have a lot of.
Right. And I would say like, well, Get Out is super like artsy. That's, it does have the comedic element to it that allows people to like breathe.
Actually, I would also say one that does that super well, although it swings back and forth on it with a little more hyperbole than Get Out does, was the It remake. The first one. It part one.
I really liked it.
Yeah, like the kids were funny. And they it was down to earth.
The kids were so funny.
Richie was fucking awesome.
Yeah, Richie was hilarious.
But like you need that though. You need like that so self-aware of what kind of film it is, and it can still bring you the scares because it was a very confident film. Now, the scares weren't as scary to me, but Pennywise was scary as shit.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I couldn't, No, DJ does not... Clowns do not scare DJ.
No. They don't really scare me either.
Okay,
actually.
They scare the shit out of me.
Except Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Well, those scare the fuck out of me.
Aw, memories. Anyway.
Episode 2, by the way. Plug.
So seeing It scared the shit out of me, but it did nothing for DJ. But the original scared DJ because I think DJ saw it
younger
when like we were kids.
Yeah,
you know?
And then Tim Curry, I feel like he looks more like a regular clown, but he has that like fucking voice.
Yeah,
like hello Richie, like fucking way of going about it. Which actually, when you see a very menacing voice come out of something that like he looks scary, but he looks normal.
Yeah,
and that what also I think provides a scare factor. As opposed to, like, grimdark and, like, obviously scary.
Yeah.
Although, again, was it Brian Skarsgård? Who's the...
Bill.
Bill Skarsgård. Brian Skarsgård. Yeah, he works in accounting. Bill Skarsgård.
The fifth Skarsgård.
He's
there's
like,
so many Skarsgårds.
Come on, just act, Brian. No, I'm gonna be an accountant.
There's, like, so many Skarsgårds, and they're all in acting.
But I would say Bill's performance, actually, he did a good job distinguishing himself from it, which is why he's also very scary. So, and then, of course, you know, you have the levity and stuff.
Well, and he's also in Castle Rock.
Yeah, you told me that before. Yeah. I'm not sure what that show is.
It's a Stephen King one. Oh. It's Stephen King with Sissy Spacek in it as well.
Yes. Okay, I remember that. We've actually probably went through this on our podcast. That's
right. I
think
so.
Yes.
So, now that we've kind of talked a little bit about horror comedies, let's kind of dive a little bit into the movie itself. So overall, your thoughts on the movie?
Fucking loved it.
Elaborate a little.
This movie has such strong characters all around. Where even the fodder characters, their lines all work. Like they throw one liner. That's all they do, and then they get killed. But like they have the exaggerated looks on their faces. Like you want them to die, but when they say something, you're like,
yeah,
they say something with a purpose though. They're all exclaiming the stereotypes of the situation.
It's so on the nose.
Yes.
It's so on the nose in like the perfect amount that it allows you to just like accept it as it is.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
They're so exaggerated that like when they die, it's just funny. Like and the gore's gruesome. The gore is so gruesome in this film, but since these people are just like cartoons, like it's hilarious how when they die, it's just like Wile E. Coyote's like over the cliff and he has the sign and he's just like, whoa. Yeah.
Help.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And the Roadrunner's just like chilling. Like that's all, this movie is a Tom and Jerry fucking Coyote Roadrunner, Bugs Bunny, Elmer Fudd thing for like 90 minutes.
But with like gross, gross misunderstandings.
And a story with heart.
I know.
Oh, dude. Fucking Dale? It's Dale, right? Which one's... No, Tucker is Alan Tudyk. So, yeah. Like, I first saw this movie, me and my friend Christine in college would just do movie nights every week. And this was one of the ones where just like... Oh, I fucked up. This is one of the ones where we... saw it just on Netflix and were like, I keep seeing it pop up. Mm-hmm. Let's see what this is about. I want to watch something scary or funny, whatever it is. It looks like it could be fun. And we're just blown away. But we kept thinking, like, man, I want Dale to get Allison. Like Dale and Allison, just, like, the chemistry there is amazing. It carries mm-hmm. the film.
Yeah.
But, like,
it was sweet.
Yes. But also, Tucker and Dale's relationship is good.
It was cool.
It's very... I mean, Alan Tudyk, like... The way he talks about his brain, like, you can definitely see, like, he's still a flawed character. He's like, I've been putting you down. Like, I've been putting you down. You're actually way smarter than you think you are. And he's been, I guess this trip feels like it's something to make up for, to, like, build him back up.
Mm-hmm.
And it took something like this happening for him to come to that, to verbalize it,
yeah.
which I think is a very layered storyline that you wouldn't normally get in horror comedies. They're not that deep.
Yeah.
They're just not that deep. And this movie has so many layers to it. That's why probably, okay, it's the best one. It's the best one. How about you? What do you think?
I really liked it just because, like, I mean, on my end of it, I think, I don't know. I think just, like, with, like, the family I grew up with, and I have, like, you know, really, really white family in Texas, and mm-hmm. it's just, like hillbilly tropes are just always making me kind of laugh.
Yeah, that's true. Because
it's just, like, yeah, there's, like, you know, like, weird, like, you know, we have, like, axes in the garage, but, mm-hmm. like, it's not, like, you know, it's just always just funny to me.
As a person with Texan relatives, I can totally understand that. That's my grandpa right there. He doesn't put his money in banks.
Right.
It's hidden places. He's got a lot of guns.
Right, that yeah. kind of shit. Like, it's so, I think it's very...
I'm this liberal fucking LA person offspring.
Right, exactly. So I mean, me too, right? So yeah. it's very fun to see those kinds of tropes turned on their head, because, you know, you always get, like, the Texas Chainsaw kind of shit where mm-hmm. or also, like, the, you know, like, there's this moment in the film where Allison is just like, education doesn't equal intellect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I've always been super, super, like, strongly, like, I've always advocated for that, because
absolutely.
I know so many people who, like, dropped out of school in, like, eighth grade, and they're some of the smartest people I know.
Yeah, and I know some people who got degrees.
Yeah, I know some
people
with...
And they just went to school to do schoolwork. They didn't learn shit.
Right, I know some people with PhDs, and I'm like, you're a fucking idiot.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, again,
I had some professors in college where I'm just like, if you can get a PhD, I can get a fucking PhD.
Right? Like, I think this is emphasized in the line when Dale passes by, the person's legs that are in the wood chipper, and he's like, stupid college kids.
Yeah.
And he's like, you goddamn stupid college kids, and just runs.
Well, and it's so funny, because it's just like, there's so many moments in the film where it's just like, all the other college kids are just like, we can go.
Yeah.
Like, literally, we could all get into the fucking car and go.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, we can leave. It's fine. And this fucking dumb shit, like, Michael, Chad. Fucking Chad.
Oh, I recognize. Yeah, once they said Chad, I'm like, that's fucking Chad right there. Sorry, any Chad listeners.
Fucking Chad.
But, you know, it really depends on your wardrobe. It's a Chad look out there.
Yeah.
There's a polo look out there. With a little, like, oh, there's no dark colors at all.
Yeah, no, they're, but anyway, so, like, when Chad is just like, no, we have to take this back from them, and just like, what
the fuck?
They live there. Like, what? This is their vacation home. They're so excited. But also, like, just, like, this silly cognitive dissonance with, like, when they walk in and they're just like, oh, we have, like, a loose beam. And, like, it's a fucking, like, murder trap. Or, like, they're like, oh, look at all these coupons on the walls. And it's literally just, like, a murder map. Like, it's just, like, all this dumb shit.
But they're so excited. It's just like,
so excited.
It's Willy's Chili. We get, and this coupon doesn't expire. High five.
Exactly. But they're looking at that shit when they don't even realize that the rest of it is just, like, newspaper clippings
and,
like, murder.
It's so, like, the Evil Dead house.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. So I think, like, it's those kinds of little details that, like, if you're a fan of horror films and you're familiar with the tropes,
mm-hmm.
it's so enjoyable to watch.
Exactly.
Because you get to see those tropes, like, totally turned on their heads, and you get to, like, really enjoy that
and the
aspect alone.
I agree. And the brilliant part of it is they set up the first part of the movie conventionally.
Mm-hmm.
They make you look at Tucker and Dale like they're actually murderous fucking hillbillies.
And then it cuts to them, like, talking.
Yeah. And he's so insecure. And they have a joke about a blowjob in the beginning with the police officer.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like, look at that. You went from straight up just, like, these murderous things, these kids being, like, Friday the 13th kids, like, we're gonna get fucking killed. But, like, seeing a menacing presence.
Yeah.
And that menacing presence, like, got stuck trying to pick up a beer on the floor.
Because they
looks
were
like
drinking and driving.
Yes, it looks like he's...
But also, before that even, like, when they were at the gas station and he was, like, they were, like, picking up supplies because they were going up to this cabin to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
They were picking up supplies. So they were getting, like, nails and hammers and, like,
yeah,
otherwise known as, like, tools of doom or whatever. But also, like, as they were walking away, you could overhear the guy over the counter, and they were also just like, and you wanted, like, Twinkies and a bottle of water, and, like, just, like, totally, like, nonchalant, like, everyday shit. But then, like, the second, like, you can tell that the... that one of the girls is listening back in, it cuts right back to
the,
like,
hard part.
To, like, you know, and a battle axe and, yeah, you know, three knives and some gun. No, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, obviously not that. Like, I
yeah,
don't remember
but
specifically.
Like, but, like, that level of, like, oh, these people are fucking for real serial
yeah.
killers.
And then they leave, and then...
Oh, no, his...
And then his Dale is
laugh.
Just... Oh, that part.
That part was... Okay, yes.
Yeah, but... and then Dale's just like... Pickled egg.
Yeah.
It's just like, what?
But it's humanizing. It's so human.
Yeah.
Like, these characters are all human as hell. Even Allison's very, like... Because they make a point that she doesn't really fit in with her friends. Like,
yeah.
She really, really doesn't.
Well,
and she
just,
wants to
yeah.
because she has the look. Like, she has the look of, like, she belongs with this crowd. But they're ditzy. And she's just like, ah, fuck, I'm not, like really into this, but, you know, I'm the cool girl, so, like,
yeah,
that
like
kind of
she's
kind of
just going along with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, like, that, but, yeah, back to that, when him with the scythe was
yeah.
one of my favorite, like, if you guys don't know
it's
or remember.
Just, like, when he's just, like, just smile and laugh.
Yeah.
And he just smiles and laughs nervously, and, like, Chad is just like, we don't want any trouble, and, like,
yeah.
they, and, like, he, again, Chad does nothing to de-escalate any
no,
situation.
No, he makes it much worse. He makes it much worse. But, like, his laugh, he's like, y'all going camping? No, he says, y'all going camping, and then he starts laughing, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Oh,
so bad. So funny.
This movie
is... It's all misunderstandings, which normally would irritate the shit out of me, because if there's any time that there's, like, extensive miscommunications in a film...
Frustrating, yeah.
It's so frustrating. Mm-hmm. It can be so frustrating to me, because I'm just like, just talk to each other! but in this instance, when it's done well, and it's...
It's done with a purpose.
It's done well, and the timing's right,
mm-hmm.
I think... I think it can I can tolerate it, because I was able to handle it for this movie.
I feel like the misunderstandings are part of the thesis of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're much easier to digest, because, like, the point is this misunderstanding is going to give you the
exactly.
tropes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good device, as opposed to, like, convenient, lazy screenwriting, which is usually when you see misunderstandings.
Yeah. Well, speaking of misunderstandings, what is your favorite misunderstanding or, like, sort of, like... Yeah, misunderstanding or miscommunication
mm-hmm.
between Tucker and Dale and the college kids.
My favorite is actually also my favorite reference, because this film has a ton of references. It's when Tucker saws through the log and hits the beehive. And he gets stung by all the bees.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he comes out just like Leatherface.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
it's just because there's a ton of bees around him. And the college
yeah.
kids are, like, prepping. They're like, we're going to fucking get him. And then he comes out like, go away.
Yeah.
And everybody flees. But he can't even pay attention to it because he's trying to get away from the bees.
Yeah.
And then that poor kid that was going to do the actual thing stabs himself.
Oh,
impales himself through
yeah.
the tree. It was fucking awesome. Like, that to me was my favorite part in the film. Yes, exactly.
I think...
How about you? Yes.
I think for me... I had it. Where did it go? I think one of my favorite misunderstandings in the film was the boat.
Oh, when
in the
they
very
first
beginning
see...
when they first see her, and mm-hmm. he's just like, and she, they're like saving her when they're pulling her out of the water.
Yeah. We got your friend!
We got your friend! And they're just like, we have your friend! And they're just like, oh my god, they have Allison! And
why are they running?
Yeah. And it's so funny, because it comes up later, and Allison is just like, they left me?
Yeah.
And Dale's just like, well, some people just aren't good in a crisis situation.
He's got all the answers. That's awesome.
And it's so funny. And another point that I totally meant to bring up, but I forgot about Dale, is that one of the other tropes that isn't necessarily horror related, but he's very smart.
He is. He's so smart.
Like, he's super smart, and he has, like, you know, and I think you know,
he's
like,
smart
again,
and insecure.
He's smart and insecure, but like he's super intelligent, and mm-hmm. he, you know, like he has like that trivia brain.
Mm-hmm.
That I think it's just it's a very fun because like that's how I was when I was a kid. I would just fucking soak everything up.
Oh yeah, yeah. My mom told me I was the kid that would just watch Discovery Channel all the time and repeat commercials and stuff I'd see on TV. Yeah,
I soaked up everything that I read and I watched, and I was just able to regurgitate it like nothing.
Yeah, and Dale's just like his insecurity is so heartwarming. Like, it really is. Like, it's a good counter to his intelligence. He really doesn't believe in it. He doesn't believe in how smart he is. And the way that he has to overcome it is a good journey.
Yeah, the way he explains it, he's just like, I'm dumb as rocks, but I remember everything I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what? Like, and it, you know, and I think that's a very interesting way to explain it, for him to explain it to himself, because I think Dave also, as like, quote-unquote hillbillies, they've grown up with these same stereotypes that, like, because they're, like, hillbillies, they're dumb. But also, like, they're happy.
Yeah.
They're literally, like, so happy just doing what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And it actually goes to show how harmful that hillbilly stereotype can be. Like, it really is, because, you know, there's obviously some brilliant people that come from these areas. Like, it's not...
Well, again,
it's not all like that.
Like, the different types of intelligence,
exactly.
Because, like... There's people like Tucker and Dale who were fixing this cabin that, like, and if you had stuck me in this cabin, I would have been like, I'm just going to live in this shitty cabin. I can't fix it because I don't know how.
Exactly.
And they were just like, oh, yeah, I can fix it. Like, whatever. It is what it is, you know?
I mean, yeah, and people have these stereotypes about hillbillies, whatever. It's like, dude, like, go into any courtroom in the South somewhere. Yeah, there's some definitely injustices there, obviously. But that's in any courtroom. But the way that these Southern lawyers present their case sometimes, eloquent-ass motherfuckers. Eloquent. It's insane.
Well, and the thing is, and this is just a Southern stereotype that always bugs me, is that connection between Southern accents and unintelligence.
Exactly.
And it irritates the shit out of
me. Same here.
And it's just one of those things that always gets on my nerves, because it's just like,
I mean, we have family in Texas, so we know that, like, hey, no.
It's one of those things, because it's just like, you know, when people immediately are, like, mocking someone and, like, their intelligence, and immediately going into a Southern accent, regardless of whether or not they're actually from the South, like, it's just insulting.
Yeah, and you don't have to use complex diction to be a smart fucking person. You really don't.
Yeah.
There's a lot of intelligence behind getting something across succinctly and in a way that feels natural, which is just like, again, like that whenever people do pigeonhole like that, I'm like, literally, look at a court case where you have a Southern lawyer. He's going to be able to compete with any other lawyer and present the same type of information. Like, it's just humans, really.
My favorite instance of this is in My Cousin Vinny.
Yes. Oh, My Cousin Vinny is so good.
It's not a Southern accent, but...
It's the Italian...
It's the New York...
The Bronx.
Yeah, it's...
The two Utes?
It's Vinny. No, well, that's the...
No, that's the judge.
That's the...
No, that's Vinny.
Oh, that's Vinny, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, no, two Utes, sir?
Yeah.
Yeah, two youths.
That is always really, always super cool to witness.
Exactly.
But I forget where I was going with that, but I think that was all those misunderstandings, all of them sort of made me laugh as like a horror fan, because all of them circled back to one trope or another.
Yeah.
Or like when Dale accidentally knocked Allison unconscious for like the second time, because like she alone has had the ability to clear this whole thing up like 5 times over.
She keeps getting knocked out.
And she keeps like either not being around or not seeing things at the right time or being unconscious, or like the moment when, like, first of all, that other friend, when she was just like, I read about this in my sociology class. It's called Stockholm Syndrome. And I'm just like, where have you been your whole life?
Yeah.
I knew about Stockholm Syndrome when I was 10.
Exactly.
We all know what Stockholm Syndrome is.
When this released, you're still part of the internet age, man.
Like, you're a college student in 2010. Get with the program.
Yeah, exactly. That also remember the second scene when she gets knocked unconscious in the grave, when they're like, he's making her dig her own grave.
Yeah.
But when he tries to charge and he, like, kills himself, he impales himself again, but, like, on top of Dale.
And he's just like...
Dale has the best horrified expressions. Like, that's, like, for the art, I'm gonna find, like, one of those Dale faces and
He's horrified. And it's just so unfortunate, because also, like, it's traumatizing for both of them.
Yeah. It is. It's traumatizing. That's probably the first time he's seen a human dead body.
Right. That's yeah. Like, literally, he's like, and then when Allison wakes up for like the second time, like, he's just like, I don't even know where to start.
Yeah. He was crying on Tucker's shoulder.
Was he
in one of the scenes later on, he's like overwhelmed with what's going on. And yeah, he like breaks down and Tucker's just like, it's okay, man.
Like, when Allison wakes up, like, he also cries. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, because he's like overwhelmed because like, who fucking wouldn't be?
Yeah.
And fucking Chad. Well, also, first of all, like, they're all like super stereotypical like frat bros.
Yes.
And like the whole time, like in the movie, like Chad was just like, you know, just like, we have to save the girls, bro. And like the whole fucking time, like, I was just mocking everything they were saying. Like, it was just like, Chad, think about the chicks, dude. You can't tell the story. You're gonna scare the chicks. The whole time. Like, because it was just like when you're talking about the Memorial Day Massacre. Yeah. First of all, Memorial Day.
I love that 90s thing kickback too, where it's just like back in like whatever 20 years ago, it's 1990, and they have the fucking pump the jam, pump it up.
Like, it's fucking ridiculous.
But it's funny because it goes to show like Tucker and has the wrong response. He's like, no, we can't go to the police, they're not gonna do it. But then Dale has the perfect reason, like, well, that's what happened. We should go because that's what happened. We can figure this out because that's what happened. But of course, you know, Tucker's the dominant one.
Right.
Yeah. But same with the Chad guy. He's the dominant one in the group. And his thoughts are the one going like, we can't. No, when you go to the police, it's stupid. No, we're going to take care of this ourselves kind of thing. And it goes to show aggressive personalities versus intelligence. Mm-hmm. Like the dichotomy between them.
Yeah. Well, and him being the aggressive personality and like also him just being a fucking sociopath, mm-hmm. Chad. And it's just like, he's the one who's like the actual psycho in this situation, yeah. Who is like systematically like, and that's like, and you see this, like, they keep bringing it up throughout the whole thing. Tucker is just like, that guy's crazy. Yeah. Like, he keeps trying to kill us. And it's just, I don't understand what's going on. We're just trying to like take care of our vacation home. And it's just like misunderstanding after misunderstanding after misinterpretation. And it's just like, holy shit. And like, when it starts happening all together, because mm-hmm. they also just, like, these assumptions that Chad is making with his friends, it's, like, mob mentality. Because mm-hmm. they're all building all up on each other.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
There was one friend where he was just like, yeah, when they were pulling Allison into the boat, I think one of them was, like, eating her face, bro. It didn't look so good, bro.
You do the voice very well, by the way.
Thank you. Like, I've mastered it after 4 years at a university.
It's funny how we can, like be like, hey, you can find intelligence everywhere, but when it comes to frats, I'm like, that's toxicity in one fucking environment that I have a, like, I've known frat people. Some of them are very good people. But the frat environment, I feel like, breeds douchery.
It breeds douchery
to a level that is easy to exaggerate.
Oh, easily. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They can handle it.
I think they'll be okay. Yeah.
I think they can handle it. But, no, yeah, just, like, that kind of dumb shit where it's just, like, I don't know. The whole thing is just so interesting to watch. But
and it's funny how Chad becomes a monster.
Yeah.
Because he physically becomes a monster as well. It's his own stupidity that does it, obviously.
Well, and at the end, when they're all in the cabin, and it's just, like, one thing after another, where, like, literally, like, they're charging at someone, like, when, like, they'll charge at, like, I think it was, like, one of them with, like, the weed whacker was, mm-hmm. like, charging at Tucker. And Tucker just, like, sidestepped. And, like, one girl was behind her and got, like, half of her face fucking, yeah. Like, buzzed off, which was horrifying.
That was the second CG scene. There was the bee, and then there's that scene. Those are two CG
scenes. That one, I was just like, oh, God. Yeah. What the fuck? And, like, he was just like, babe, I'm sorry. And I was just like, what are you going to do?
I love this movie does a really good job of showing the action up until a point, like the insertion, the buzz, whatever it is, and then cutting away to the splatter.
Yeah.
Like the way it does that is perfect.
It always splatters on also, like, the stereotypical, like, clickety-clack, like, mm-hmm. blonde
yes.
chick who's, like, always constantly getting, like, covered with blood,
oh.
Which was very funny. Also, one of the girls called her heels stripper heels, which was very funny because they were just, like, clear, wide, like, heels. Regular like, they heels. Weren't, like, stilettos or anything. I was just, like, weird, but okay. It was...
Girl didn't write this film.
No.
Or do the production design.
No,
maybe.
Like,
I
they were,
know.
Like, 4 inches. Like, I was, yeah. like, weird, but okay.
They're, like, so the actress still has to run comfortably across the thing.
Right, and I'm just, like, show me a stripper in 4-inch yes. heels, please. I beg of you. But,
So in terms of this question, I got this and one more, actually.
Yeah.
Actually, two more. No, we actually went through the misunderstanding. I was going to say kill the film, but I think that actually goes into our misunderstanding bit.
No.
Okay, we'll get to it, though. Okay, fuck it then. Kill the film. What is it?
Woodchipper.
Woodchipper for me, also. Bam. High five. Yes.
Friendship.
Friendship. Podcast partners, business partners, Woodchipper kill. Best fucking, yeah, best
totally.
Kill. Best
no, that kill. One was so great because, like, he literally was just, like, just minding his own business and he just so happened to bend down at the right moment. And this dude literally, first of all, no one had the foresight of thinking, if I jump at this guy and he happens to move, I'm literally diving headfirst into a wood chipper.
Yeah.
Like, where's the foresight in that? Like, literally none of these college students have critical thinking skills.
No.
Like, which
they're all kind of kids, honestly. Like, yeah.
Like, I could have believed high school.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
I could have believed they were high school students.
No, I remember people in college that were still high school fucking students, and they were, like, seniors.
It's
so,
true.
Yeah.
It's true. No, in some cases, I feel like these people definitely have some arrested development issues.
Definitely. Especially the fodder people.
Yeah, like, emotionally, they still had some work to do.
In my sociology class, yeah.
I read this in my sociology class. This is called Stockholm Syndrome. When you fall in love with your captor, it happens after 12 hours.
I love how he's like, is that it? Are you in love with these guys?
I know. He's just like, tell me. So look me in the eye and tell me you're not in love with him. And it's just like, it has been, like, 3 hours, guys.
Yeah, Allison's like, what the... I've been... conscious for like 45 minutes of this whole thing. Like, what the fuck's going on?
Like, he was so aggressive too. Well, also, we forgot the part where he was like a little, like,
a little rapey.
Yeah, a little rapey. And, like, cornered her, and she was just like, okay, I'm gonna go, we're gonna forget this ever happened, and you're gonna leave me alone.
Mm-hmm. Dude, but I also, in the woodchipper scene, Dale's like getting the wood, he hears it, and then he's like, and he tries to stop it.
Well, and it's just like, once he's in the wood chipper, what is there to do?
They have the body.
Well, and
like,
he
right
stops
there.
When, like, the wood chipper is just like, mm-hmm. and it stops, and he's just like, you okay? And it's just like, no, Dale. No, Tucker.
That was
he's
Tucker,
not okay.
Yeah. Oh, but Alan Tudyk is so good
funny.
In this
the
fucking
movie. The
comedic
timing is so funny.
He just has a strong character presence. Like, he knows his character. Like, he does it so fucking well.
Or the moment. Actually, I might have a second favorite misunderstanding. When they're hiding in the bush,
mm-hmm.
and they're walking by, and they're just like, college kids!
Yeah!
We have your friend! And
they leave the note?
And they're just like, well, because they were playing a game.
Yeah.
And the friends only hear part of the conversation, and Dale's talking about, like, beating her at the game.
Yeah.
And because they're playing a board game. And he's just like, well, you can finish her off when we get back. And they're just like, oh my god, they're gonna kill her.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'll just write a note in this log in case they come by. Right, like, and it's just like, literally, we have your friend.
Yeah.
And it's just like...
so good.
Like,
okay.
They try so hard.
I hope, listeners, that you actually paused earlier and then went to watch this film, because if you're listening to this podcast and not having watched this film, we're spoiling a lot of the good bits here.
It's
so goddamn
and
good.
And we're not doing the film justice.
No.
Because the timing and how they speak and, like, it's just, like, the visual of it.
And Alan Tudyk fucking just acting.
Yeah, it's like, true. Although I feel like we are amiss without at least mentioning Tyler Labine. He did a really good job.
Oh, actually, yeah, he did better than Alan Tudyk, I think, because Dale is,
yeah,
just
Dale
a good
is
character.
Is truly, like, the star. Like, he's the main character.
He's the,
like,
heart of the film.
It's his story.
He's on the cover, front and fucking center, with his chainsaws and shit. Like, which is a reference to Evil Dead. He's mm-hmm. he's doing the ash thing, but he's like, He provides the growth of the film, you know? And he provides, like, the horror reactions you would expect. He grounds the film, too. Like, that's, for a character to do all those things in, like, 90 minutes, that's a great character right there. He deserves his name on there. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. But no, Dale's a great character, and I'm bummed that we won't get a second one, but I think it's a great standalone.
Yeah,
but
we should cherish what we have here, for sure.
So, this film turned the killer hillbilly trope on its head. Other than that, what kind of really prominent tropes did you notice that you would, or I'm sorry, well, I misread my own question. Let me try that again.
Okay.
So, this film turned killer hillbilly tropes, just like what we see in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, on its head. In the future, what other kind of big tropes would you like to see tackled in a similar fashion?
Found footage, but like but, not done shittily.
Okay.
Found footage, I think, would be good because there could be a lot of misunderstandings there as well, with just like noises in the house and things like that.
Yeah.
And really, of what other genres? Killer hillbilly.
Like tropes.
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
Killer clown.
Killer clown. Oh my god, like a regular clown.
Yeah, it's a fucking regular
like
clown.
Like a regular clown. Oh, that would be awesome.
But you know what would be really funny? A found footage killer clown through the perspective. Remember those like killer clowns on bridges? Do you remember that like weird thing that
like,
happened
movements?
A couple years ago?
Yeah.
Like something like that where like someone's like trying to figure out what that is and it's literally just like one clown walking to work.
Yeah. His car fucking broke down.
Yeah, or some
his,
shit. Yeah.
His whole path and the police are trying to find him and follow the path and like murder's happening around him.
Literally, it's just him trying to find the fastest route to his job.
Like he put on the wrong makeup and he's like, I can't actually easily get this off because I put like the permanent makeup on. So if you guys like, I'm not really like trying to be menacing, and I put it on pretty terribly, so it looks scarier than I intended.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I think that would be really fun.
And then all it'd be a funny one too. A killer doll. It's just a regular doll, but so people are tripping over.
Oh my god!
It.
Think of like Talking Tina.
Yeah,
but like it's just a regular doll and
it's
a really paranoid man.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, I like that. Oh, there's a lot of tropes, I think. But my last question here, actually, what was your favorite reference in the film? Horror callback that you can identify in this one? Because of course you get the Blair Witch in the beginning. You
right.
got Tex Chainsaw, Evil Dead with the.
When he's, like, dipping on, like, the soldering mask.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I think the Texas Chainsaw with
Texas
the bees.
Texas Chainsaw. I think, yeah. That definitely takes the cake for me.
I think that one was really fun. I think one of the other ones for me would be the, just, like, the killer cabin.
Yeah. Yes.
Like,
absolutely.
I think the cabin was like, I don't know, because
it was its own character.
Yeah, I was. That's kind of where I was gonna go with it. But yeah, the own like just like all the little details, because there's a lot of you have to have a certain attention to detail when you're watching this movie, which I the first half I did, the second half I didn't because I was once again very stoned. but the like you know the little details that you have to like pay attention to see in this film, if you're a horror fan, because then you pick up on the little things, like the fact that like this was like a murderer, like a this so an ex-murderer or like a former murderer like lived in this cabin.
Yeah,
and they didn't pick up on that at all.
No, to them it's a fixer-upper.
Yeah,
and they present it too in this like it looks horrifying, but then they find the little details like holy shit coupons and like okay that's a messed up thing right there. We got to make sure to get that fixed. Like there's a lot of cool. It's the movie itself. It gives you the little horror thing you want, and then it gives you the funny little relevant, like, realistic kind of bit. And it's a laugh, because it's all a commentary, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's cool.
Are we good?
I think we're good. This is our, I think, probably going to be our shortest episode.
Oh, all right, whatever.
But I think I'm okay with that if you are.
I am totally fine with it, yes.
But, no, if you haven't seen this movie, totally check it out. It's very fun. It's enjoyable. It's just an enjoyable, like, it doesn't require a whole lot of thinking. It's just a fun movie.
I agree. And it's honestly, even like, no matter what.
It's a good lazy Sunday movie.
It's a good lazy Sunday movie. If you're listening on a Sunday, plan watching this, obviously.
Yeah. But
or
if you're listening to this on the Wednesday that it comes out, like, plan, watch it on a Sunday.
Watch a lazy, exactly. I mean, and for, I feel like it's one of those just, it's just a feel-good movie, as gory as it is. For people like us who like horror and, like, fucked up shit, this is a feel-good film.
Yeah.
Like, it's a legitimately feel-good film.
As
like,
fucked as that sounds, yeah.
Yeah, as gory and as crazy as it is, it's intelligent.
Yeah.
It's super hilarious, and it has a lot of heart.
It has so much heart, and it's, like, it's such, like, a genuinely adorable love story.
It is.
That it's just, it's sweet.
And it tackles stereotypes. And it does it yeah. intelligently.
Yeah.
And exactly. shits on frat people. Like, it just overall.
It does all of it. And you know what? I thank it for that.
I agree. I actually just feel like I really needed it.
Yeah, same. So we have some pretty cool shit coming up this month.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so, okay, except next week. I mean, I wouldn't say except. It's going to be a wonderful episode. It's going to cover
It's going to be a great episode about a movie that we're both kind of... about.
I would actually say it's a bad movie, and I can't wait to shit on it. We knew it was going to come to one of these days, guys. We knew it was going to, we're going to get a movie that was going to just be bad.
We can't not cover it.
Exactly. Horror has a lot of bad movies in it. Is the genre. I mean, any and genre you know has what? It.
We have so many, and we have so many to get through.
Exactly. We might as well just take one on now. And the thing is, it's a pretty beloved film.
Yeah.
But, y'all are wrong. Whoever the fans are, you're wrong. It's
great.
Really bad. What I cannot wait to just rip it apart, which will be fun.
But that's for next week.
That's for next
but
week.
But welcome to April.
Yes.
Thankfully, we have no actual... Well, this is our first not-themed month for a couple of
for
months.
For a while.
For a while. Because we had February and then we had March, so those were our past 2 months. So we're finally getting back into our regularly scheduled programming.
Exactly, guys. To get some variety up in this bitch.
So, yeah, right? Some variety, finally. So we have, I'm not going to say, you know, names or anything, but we have some cool shit. We have, like we said, we have our very first big sequel coming up this month.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I can't wait for that one.
So we have some cool stuff. Some more, this is actually a very contemporary month.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not doing a whole lot of older films. I think next week is actually our oldest film.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So, everything else is, oh, no. The end of the month's the oldest film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of pretty recent, all things considered, because this is 2010, and then we have some other ones that are like late 2010s as well.
Which I think, you know, there's an audience obviously out there for it. So yeah, let's discover it. All our younger listeners will probably like these films a lot more.
So yeah, thank you everyone. This was Tucker and Dale versus Evil from 2010, directed by Eli Craig. So thank you everyone for joining us. Please, 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 if you have not already, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review.
If you feel it.
If you feel it. Even if you don't, I'd really appreciate it.
Even if you don't, just put the rating.
No, but seriously, all the reviews and ratings have really meant the world to us, and it's been really great, and it makes us happy, so thank you.
And I love when you guys comment on the Instagram. It's fun. So just keep doing it.
And speaking of the Instagram, we mentioned it earlier, we will plug it again. You can follow the podcast on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast, that is HORRORBLE, People's Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Horror People Pod. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Ghost Coffee Shop. So you can yell at me to watch Hereditary.
Yeah.
No, at watched Happy Death Day. Both of them.
Both of them. Yell at her for both, please.
And then you can just yell at Anthony in general at Herulean Hustler on Twitter and Instagram.
I don't normally respond to Twitter, but I think I'm going to make a vow to actually start using it.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm seeing more follows on it that I thought I would get. So I'm like, fuck it. I might as well engage here now.
Yay.
If the base has to be built, I'll figure Twitter out.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Whatever.
You're so grouchy.
I'm so not into Twitter. Well, it could be fun. We'll find out.
So thank you everyone for joining us, and we will catch you next week.
Yep. Adios, motherfuckers.
Thanks. Bye.